brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Curtis, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing this evening?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Matthew. Yeah, doing pretty good today.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Curtis. A real pleasure. I have to thank George for kind of facilitating it. So I'm glad we could make it happen. And yeah, it sounds like it's been a interesting couple of weeks for you. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. It really has. Yeah, honestly. Like, I mean, Ramshackle Games, I've been running it for like, it's just coming up on, it's going to be 20 years this year. And, you know, it really is a lot of ups and downs, I tell you.
Yeah, I mean, so let's start right at the present then. I mean, and talk us through, you know, I mean, am I right in thinking you were basically on the verge of going out of business and then things have kind of pulled together and you seem to be looking out the other end of that now?
Yeah. It's been a mad couple of weeks, I tell you. Basically, like, I mean, working for yourself, I'm also like a full-time like single dad as well. So, you know, there's a lot to get done. And then, you know, I never really, you know, it's like ups and downs quite a lot of the time. And I never really make a huge amount of money off what I'm doing. But over like this Christmas and basically November, December and January, we're just like, I was making a loss on the business. And I went into work Tuesday. And, you know, just looked at my bank account and it's like, right, I can either pay the rent on the business or buy food. And like, it was my New Year's resolution this year to ask for help because I don't think I've been asking for enough help. And so I put that into practice. I just took a photo of one of my models and put it up online saying, you know, help. And honestly, it was amazing. It was just like so many people just, like, I mean, essentially, I was just saying, look, you know, if you want to put in an order, now would be a great time to do it because I just really need some cash, expecting to get a few more orders. And like within 24 hours, I think I got 260 orders. And then over like 3 days, I'm basically up to 350 orders. So like got out of my financial issue, but, you know, now I've got the other problem of like too much work to do, which is a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm. So what, I mean, where did you post that initial post? I mean, it's obviously got shared a lot that it's got that much reach and impact.
Most of my marketing's done through Facebook and Instagram. And I just moved on to Blue Sky as well, like a couple of weeks ago, which has been really good. You know, like there's a big influx of people coming into it. So, you know, it's a really good chance to sort of like, I don't know if I'm making new, you know, getting new followers or whether it's followers who've migrated from Meta, but you know, like I never have any money for marketing. So it's all just like, whatever I can do free marketing, you know, like, posting on blogs, well, posting on like forums and groups and stuff, you know, going into Facebook and Instagram and the social medias and yeah, just taking it from there really. I mean, the most surprising thing just really has been like, the amount of amazing messages I got, just like loads of support and just people saying honestly the nicest things. I think that's, you know, like this little community that we've got of people who are like really interested in models, you know, they really like, they care about small businesses like mine. You know, people want you, I mean, you see the way it is with like the digital art, the AI art coming in. There's gamers really don't like it. You know, and every time you see somebody trying to market something using, you know, AI generated art, there's always comments, people going, oh, I don't like this, you know, please take it out. And people appreciate the like the handmadeness of everything. So yeah, just like, you know, having been told that by, you know, 100 people is just like amazing. You know, you go from being depressed in the morning to being like just feeling really great about the, you know, these rather, I don't know, odd life choices that I've made to like make weird little art models, you know, and just knowing that there's enough people out there who are interested in that sort of thing. You know, that's what's great about our hobby.
Yeah, I mean, obviously getting the comments and that will be really nice. But I mean, getting the business ultimately, like, you could get all the comments in the world, that's not going to keep you in business, is it? But getting actual orders like that is, I mean, that's, has that really saved the business in the,
oh, yeah,
the medium term?
Yeah. I mean, everybody stepped up, and, you know, just things like donations as well. Like, I didn't ask for donations, but to be given, like, one guy gave us £200, just, you know, I think $200. It was just like, look, I hope, you know, I hope this helps. You know, the generosity of our community to, like, help somebody like me has just been amazing. And you say, yeah, okay, the you know, comments don't pay the bills, but at the same time, like, it really does a lot for, like, your psychological well-being. You know, I spend a lot of time. I mean, I think a lot of people think Ramshackle Games is like, you know, a team of us, you know, with like a big production like system and everything. But it really isn't. It's just literally me, like, in a couple of little rooms tucked away at the back of a sort of little industrial unit, you know. And a lot of the time you are, you know, just in there on my own thinking, you know, I've been losing money this month. What is the point of being here? And then having people saying, you know, like, just such nice things. Like, you know, people saying that they don't know, you know, that they've grown up with Ramshackle Games being part of this sort of community space and, you know, like, being part of the sort of, I don't know, like, art, hobby side of things, I guess. They're just having people saying that they appreciate what you do really makes it easier to be in that space, makes it more fun. It's like, okay, people do like this weird little thing that I'm doing. So, yeah. You know, if it was just money, it's like, you know, I could go and get a job doing something that just pays, but it's like a grind.
Mm-hmm. I want to obviously get into Ramshackle Games and the origins. I mean, we've got 20 years there to kind of find out about, but what's caused this problem to happen in the first place? Like, you know, was it lack orders? Is it other external factors outside your control? Like, what kind of put you in this position?
I mean, you know, the cost of living is going up. I don't know if it's people have less to spend on their hobby. Because I think when times are hard, like, having something that you can do at home, you don't have to spend a lot on your hobby to have a really great time and to, like, fill up your hours doing all these kind of cool projects. But, I mean, Brexit, basically, I lost about a third of business, you know, overnight, maybe a quarter. Just from loss of sales to Europe. And then, like, over Christmas as well, there's new, like, safety legislation that's been brought into the EU. So all businesses selling into the EU from outside have to have, like, a representative in Europe and have to, like, conform to a bunch of new, like, safety laws. Like, I now have to, anything I sell to send to Europe, I have to, like, stick a safety label on the packaging, like, on the packet for whatever the little product is that goes into the shipping box, plus having to write, like, what are they called? You have to do, like, a declaration of conformity and a, like, risk assessment for the product. And I got, like, 450 products on the shop, so it's a lot of paperwork. And so, I had to basically close to Europe for about 6 weeks until, I mean, it was just before Christmas as well. So you've got, like, I wanted to avoid problems that would be caused by the Christmas post, you know, which just means more returns coming back to me, which means I have to send them again. So that's, like, comes out of the sort of cost that I've, you know, of the product or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just, like, kind of put it off over the Christmas period and then, like, did all the paperwork. But, you know, I mean, that's, like, probably, like, a quarter of the business comes from Europe, even after Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's been a big factor.
Yeah, these things that you're talking about, you know, risk assessments, paperwork, red tape, these are exactly the things I imagine you don't dream about, you know, back in the day when you're thinking it'd be great to run a company in the hobby, you know, a miniatures company, a games company. You don't imagine yourself sitting down dealing with all this sort of stuff, do you?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I've got friends who, I mean, Nottingham, I live in Nottingham, so Nottingham's great for, there's quite a lot of hobby games here. And some of the guys working a lot more switched on than I am, so they've been really helping the rest of us sort of get up to speed on it, which has been good. Because I tell you, there's no help off the council and no help off the government.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I suppose let's now get into the sort of history of the company then. You mentioned 20 years. So talk to us about the lead up to the origins of Ramshackle Games.
Oh, back in the midst of time. Well, it all started when I took a sword blow to the eye. I used to do like Viking reenactment.
It's a line in Skyrim, I was going to say.
Yeah, well, arrow to the knee, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, like I got hit in the eye with a sword and I'm blind in my right eye. And I used to work making video games. Like I'm an animator by trade. I worked on Chicken Run back in whatever that was, 2001 or something, and then got a job up in Nottingham making video games. And I'd like taken a week off to sit and sculpt a model, and then gone to like Viking training that week and just got smacked in the eye with a sword. And yeah, you know, like cheesy as it sounds, like losing your eye makes you look at your life in a different way, right? And I was like, oh, you know, going to a job, those days when you just don't want to go, you know, like, and animating is great fun, but a lot of the time it is just, especially in video games, it's guy gets up from the ground for the 50th time, because you've got to do like all these different positions. Like if you get knocked forward, if you get knocked backwards, you've got to do the animation of him standing back up again, which is like a really complex animation with all like weight and timing and everything to show that they're getting up. And you just end up doing that again and again and again on like a grey background, because you're not animating with all the textures and stuff on the models just to like make it run a bit better. And so, you know, like I'm going, oh, I just want a bit more colour in my life, you know, and I want to do what I want to do. So, yeah, just started making models and, you know, got my friend to help me set up a website and just went from there, really.
I mean, when you say it sounds very easy to say I just started making models, but like, is that you just completely like I'm doing this for the very first time? Like, how did that kind of evolve?
Oh, no, I mean, I've been like making models since I was a little kid. Used to buy like Airfix kits and things from the local shop. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think it was like my brother's 10th birthday or something. He bought some Kev Adams Goblin Wolf Riders, and I got given like a skeleton, and I'm like, right, that's it, I'm doing this from now on, no more historicals.
Yeah.
And yeah, just went from there, really. And yeah, you always used to try and like do conversions and things, and you know, that's how you kind of like learn how to sculpt, by just sort of you know, doing the musculature where you've like glued the wrong arm on or something. Mm-hmm. And then start doing like hands and faces, and yeah, just go from there.
So when you were kind of in that end stage of your video game career, were you pretty active in the hobby at that time?
Yeah, I think I partially got the job because I took a bunch of like, I'd scratch built a bunch of like orcs riding pigs and like a shaman on a spider. Unfortunately, all that stuff's gone. I moved house one time and I needed some money. So I sold this, like, I had quite a big orc and goblin army, like loads of Kev Adams sculpts, loads of old Citadel lead, a whole bunch of stuff that I just sort of like sculpted and cast in the backyard. So sort of like teaching myself more about how to make molds and things. And I sold it and it just got lost in the post, you know, like 150 models, all painted in that like classic 90s, early 2000s style.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, that is. It'll be out there somewhere, I suppose, to this day.
I don't know. I've never seen anything come up on any, like, you know, any old hammer groups or anything.
God, yeah. Oh,
so I think it's probably one of them ones where it's like they bust it open. It's like, you know, it gets lost and then it gets what, like, I guess sold. They sell the sort of like lost post, unclaimed post. And, you know, you imagine somebody doesn't know anything about it, opening the box and going, oh, it's just a bunch of toys. Yeah. This isn't worth anything.
Yeah, yeah. I saw sort of tentatively taking those steps into making models. Like, how does that then evolve to become an eventual business?
Well, because I'd had the idea that maybe I should make chess sets, like figurative chess sets. So I sculpted all that up. I had a bit of savings from, you know, like being young, living in a cheap house and getting paid pretty well as an animator. So I'd saved up some savings and I just sort of put that into, you know, buying the equipment and renting a space. And my friend was like between jobs, came in and was like, oh, can we make some post-apocalyptic 28 mil stuff? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And so that was like the start of the post-apocalyptic range, really. Just we made a couple of vehicles between us, did some wheels and things. I sculpted a few figures and yeah, they started selling. So I was working like part-time as a cleaner as well, cleaning PC Worlds, just to like, you know, keep the sort of money ticking over. And I think it was about a year I did that, year and a half, before I just went full-time.
Yeah. I mean, sort of 20-odd years ago or 20 years ago, how are you going about getting the word out there and drumming up business?
Well, it's like the time of the forums. So, yeah, just going on forums and chatting to people. And, yeah, I had like a website. So, I mean, that's like 2005.
Yeah.
End of 2005. So yeah, I mean, the internet existed and it was getting pretty fast and stuff, you know.
So how did things kind of evolve from there? What did the miniature ranges, you know, what kind of miniatures did you stick with? Did you find your feet with certain aesthetics, certain genres?
Well, I always do quite a lot. I like post-apocalyptic stuff. Because I like it and also because there's like a bit of a sort of an orc crossover. I've always loved doing orc stuff. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, I think it's like if I sculpt what I want to sculpt, I enjoy doing it and the models come out better. I have tried sort of, you know, chasing GW's coattails and being like, oh, I can make something that people can use as, but that never really seems to work as well. It's like, I think it's like a bit more cynical, you know, this sort of idea that I'm trying to like make money from somebody else's idea. And you just don't have it doesn't seem genuine. It's not authentic. And so it's not as good. So every time I'm like, right, I want to play this game and I want to do this really weird force for it. So I'm just going to make it. And then, yeah, that's what sells.
How would you describe your sculpting style?
Loose. Yeah, loose. I mean, I like, you know, like a Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo. Like, I don't like their finished stuff. I like their sketches. That's what I love to look at. You know, Jez Goodwin's sketches of the sort of Eldar and the kind of like development pictures that he does. You know, I way prefer them to seeing these kind of like meticulously hand-painted, brightly colored, like finished pieces. You know, I love John Blanche's stuff, which is all splatter and being loose and, you know, loose lines. I'd rather look at that than, you know, some of the art cards from, you know, Horus Heresy or whatever, where it's very skilled application of paint, but you lose something in that sort of like refining process, I think. And I prefer the kind of like looseness, like slightly unfinished. I like to see, you know, fingerprints on things. And I just think it's more fun to look at, really.
It's confession time in our February question of the month as we ask you to list your last three hobby purchases. Whether you've picked up a cheap set of brushes on Amazon, an obscure new rule set on Wargames Vault, or an appallingly brilliant manticore miniature on eBay, be sure to tell us all about it. Far from being judged, I'm pretty sure you'll find yourself in very good company. Get your audio clip in over at bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail, and I need them in by Thursday the 27th of February. That's bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. And now, back to the show. What are some notable miniatures that inspired you growing up?
Well, I mean, anything Jez Goodwin ever does, it's like, that's brilliant. He's got a really good ability to get like proportion just right. And, you know, he hasn't lost it. So, yeah, anything that he does, I really like.
So what have the last couple of years looked like in terms of the kind of miniatures that you've been creating?
Well, I've been working a lot more with different artists. I do a bit of a scheme where I call it the community casting project. And it's like I accept submissions from anybody out there who's, yeah, wants to just get something molded up and doesn't want to do it at home because of the chemicals and the equipment that you need, and isn't really looking to make it into something that, you know, that they want to make money off. It's just about like getting something out, getting something made. So what I say is, if you send me something, I'll make the molds for free, and I'll send you back as many copies as you want in exchange for me being able to recoup my cost by selling it on the shop. And, you know, it's quite a big range of different stuff, from just people who've sent me in things and then I send them back copies, and some of them sell okay, some of them don't sell very well, but overall, you know, it's worth doing because it's so fun to like get these really characterful sculpts, you know, really interesting stuff, and you can never predict what's going to sell. You know, some stuff that I'm like, oh, I don't think this one's going to sell particularly well, it's like, yeah, sell 20 of them on the first day. Another ones that you're like, oh, this is amazing, and you like sell two of them and you're like, oh, you just can't judge. So there's that project that I do, but then I've also been working with like more you know, artists that are, you know, I've got a range and stuff. So I sell Gardens of Hecate. I've got quite a few of her things on the web store, a couple more that she just sent me last week as well. I sell a bunch of stuff from Trent, who does the YouTube channel Miscast. Mm-hmm. And Banhoos, we've got some Chob minis. They're all like really amazingly fun, really creative stuff. I got three demons from BeQuest miniatures. We've got, I've recently been working with Rossi Does Drawings. Rossi's got like this really beautiful sort of like sketch style, and just started sculpting maybe a year ago. And his stuff's gone from being like, you know, fun to like just being really crisp. His latest stuff is amazing, just really good. And it's really great to see like this sort of development of the artists. You know, we've got, you should basically go and have a look on the website. There's loads of really cool like art stuff that we're doing. And yeah, it seems to be pretty popular. You know, I think people like supporting artists and like having these really unique models that are just not going to get produced in any other way. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to see them at Games Workshop. You're not going to see them like serious companies putting these things out, because, you know, sales can be quite low on a lot of them, which is fine if it's just a one person show. And, you know, like I actually managed to get sales. So, yeah.
Obviously, your miniatures are going to be usable like agnostically across loads of different rule sets. But have you ever kind of closely tied in with a particular game or rule set at all, or games designer?
I mean, I've worked with different sort of game designers. A lot of the models are in Gaslands. I do some like 20 mil, it's like toy car scale. I mean, I say 20 mil, but then we start getting into the whole conversation about, what is it, box scale?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which we could go down that route, but it's probably not worth it. But yeah, so like I do a couple of different like scaled ranges in the toy car range. And yeah, when Mike did the did the rules, he had basically just bought some of the one of the conversion sets off me. And so there, all the photos of his converted cars that are in the rule book, a lot of them using the sort of Ramshackle game stuff. And was it Mutants and Death Ray Guns?
Oh, by yeah.
Andreas DeGolfi, is it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't sell miniatures. So in the back of his books, he puts like a recommendation, and he put in a recommendation for me. So I was like, oh, can I make something from the book? You can have a gang of mutant plants in there.
Yeah.
So you can get basically, I tried to do every option that's available in the, like in the sort of on the charts. Because it's got a lot of it's like random gang generation.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was really good fun. I've got a couple of games myself, Nuclear Renaissance and Mini Gangs. And I'm always trying to like make stuff that fits in with that.
So is that a rule sets that you created and developed yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. Nuclear Renaissance is a bit like, it's like a post-apocalyptic skirmish game. It's pretty heavy on the like gang generation. But then the game's really simple. It's quite a good fun game. You can basically play anything you want, and there's quite like detailed rules for it. But then Mini Gangs is the much more popular one, which is like we play it as kind of like a beer and pretzels game or like a club game. I designed it so as I could play it with my 6-year-old. I mean, he's now just turning 14, but I wrote it so as he could play. So it's a The Mini Gangs, like the free version of it, which is called Mini Gangs Gateway, you can get it on my downloads page, and it's just like a one page rule set, where you have like four guys in your gang.
Mm.
But then there's like another way to play where you have a set of cards that have like different equipment and armor and guns and things on it, so you can kind of like. You just get given 8 of them before the game.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of like, you have you 4 guys and then these cards, and it really flavors the game. So you can just like show up with your mates and get stuff down on the table. You know, so we play on like 40 by 40 centimeter boards or 50 by 50 centimeter boards. And it's a really great game for going to like shows or, you know, if you've got like 8 of you at the local club who want to play, or 5 of you who want to game together, but you want to get through the game like in a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we play that quite a lot, and yeah, like sells quite well.
What about your hobby these days? Like, you're obviously running the business, but like, talk to us a wee bit about the hobby outside of that, the opportunity to play games, anything like that.
Yeah, we've got a cool little gaming group in Nottingham, really. Play lots of like indie games. Like the main guys I've been playing with has been Googly Eyed Skull, who does like a YouTube channel. He's really into his models and he's up for playing anything. Pablo, who's the Still Tower. It's like really cool. He does a lot of like illustration, really awesome lino cuts, prints. And then like he's like, oh, Curtis, I'm gonna have a go at doing some sculpting. And he's just like a master at it. He's like, you know, his first model, you're looking at it going, that can't be your first model. And he's like, what do you mean, you saw me sculpting? And I'm like, yeah, but so he's really good. And Knucklebones Miniatures, and then like there's a few, 3D Kingdoms, guy called Gabe runs that, and Sprue Goblin, Nikki Chatwin. So, you know, we play quite a lot of things. Like we did Forbidden Psalm, we've done Necropolis is kind of, we're playing a bit of that at the moment. Cauldron, so a lot of skirmish games. Oh yeah, Mordheim. Yeah, a few other bits of those, Gaslands. So yeah, we game pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always a game going on every week, but you know, like I can't always go to them because I've got kids and stuff. But yeah, gaming as much as I can.
I think George was saying too that you got to bring out your lead as well.
Oh yeah, every year definitely. I love it. It's really great. I mean, you know, like 100 people who are super into this real weird like little niche. It's free. If anybody's like thinking of going, definitely go. It's really great. The venue is amazing. You know, it's sad that Brian passed, but Diane was the one that was really always sort of running it. And she is just such a good host. You know, it's just like bends over backwards to accommodate anything you need. You know, like amazing displays of like thousands of models, and nobody ever shows up with them unpainted, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's beautiful. Just a sea of, you know, loads of old lead, loads of modern stuff. You know, it's not about gatekeeping. It's about the enjoyment of that sort of ethos for playing games. Like you're playing older games or playing new games with old models or bringing kit bashes, and it's free to get into, you know, that the Ansel's put it all on, don't charge us a penny. And just really good fun, just really good community. The painting competition's always like amazing. They say it's a painting competition and then they reinforce the idea that it's not actually a competition.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just amazing. Yeah, really good.
Do you try and get a game in when you're there?
I usually, well, probably about half of the years that I've been, I've run like a massive, like sort of people can just join in the game. I have like a 12x6 board and I lay it out as Hell's Reach, which was out of the Rogue Trader book. There's like a fluff section about this place called Logan's World, which has a town on it called Hell's Reach. And there's all these lovely Carl Cricklow sort of post-apocalyptic stuff. So I was thinking, I really want to do a display, a big display of all my scenery. And all my scenery is post-apocalyptic. So I'm like, how can I jam that into the Warhammer 40,000 universe? And then I'm like, Hell's Reach. So I set that up and run it using a slightly modified version of like Necromunda, the old Hammer version. And just say, like, bring what you want, you know, any gang from any, like, publication, just bring it and let's play. And then you get a bunch of upgrades as well to sort of, like, so you're not just having a starting gang. So really people can, you know, bring these gangs that they've got from the past or make something that they always wanted or try out some real weird beardy rule that you would never, like, do in an actual like campaign because you'd annoy all the other people. But yeah, it's amazing. Just like the amount of like, how'd you call it? Like emergent gameplay that comes out of it. Like, you know, people hating each other or, you know, not hating each other, but the gangs hating each other. There being like story and narrative that just comes from having 20 people playing one of these like insane old games, you know?
Was that the table, like when you went into the marquee, if you call it that? It was right. It was immediately on your right. There was the big gunship that was in the sky and that.
Yeah. That gunship. That's like a couple of guys that I sort of share my workspace with. Well, I mean, they rent in the same building as me. They're called Caesar Inc.
Yeah.
And they're just really good at gaming. And they're like, they'd planned that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
To sort of like rock up with the helicopter, know that it's going to get shot down. So then, yeah, like I mean, there's 20 of us playing. So the game, so each turn takes maybe like 25 minutes to play. So they flew this helicopter in and then it got shot down. And then they like, he put out all these little boxes and like unloaded the models from this massive sort of helicopter that they'd sort of put together.
Mm-hmm.
And then the turn went on for a bit, and then when the next turn started, these two guys would started like saying code words to each other, like code blue. And then they had all these like shipping containers, and they opened the shipping containers and there was like an alien monster in each of them, which they'd planned to basically get shot down, chuck all these monsters out. And he was running them. They were running them as gene stealers.
Yeah.
So he just made a huge mess. And you know, like, what an amazing thing to bring to like a game. You know.
Yeah.
Good.
I mean, that table, I did spend a lot of time just looking over that table. It was outrageously good. There was just so much detail there. And I know a couple of the lads for the podcast community were involved in the game as well, and they said it was like chaotic in a really good way, you know, like you're kind of describing there. So like that must have been a massive amount of work in the lead up to the event to kind of pull that off.
I mean, because I've got all the, it's just my scenery. I mean, that's the scenery that I've been working on for 20 years, you know, just building a bit here and a bit there.
Yeah.
And after 20 years, I've got like, you know, enough to do a massive table for. So, I mean, the hard part is I don't drive. So it's just really begging somebody to give it a lift. And then, you know, just carting it all out. It's not that hard. It's okay.
Getting there at 5 a.m, so to set all that up, presumably.
Like I'm saying, the Ansells are just like super accommodating. And yeah, like the guy who sort of semi-organises it, Garth, he's just really accommodating too. So I'll just kind of like talk to him, book the table. And usually I have like Friday is set up. And then if anybody wants to use the table, we'll sort of do something a bit casual there in the evening on a Friday sometimes, and then run it all day Saturday and then clear up on the Sunday morning so that then, and I try and get that done as quickly as possible. So then the table's free for people to use in the afternoon.
Yeah. You're doing one. I seen it just got confirmed there for the weekend of the 8th, I think it is, of August 2025. Yeah. Are you doing something this year?
Well, I was thinking of trying to like get into some other games rather than doing my big one, just letting somebody else use that space. Because there are only like, what is it, 2 of the really big display ones. And, you know, the other guys really put on a good show too. So I was thinking of maybe, I don't know yet, like one of the years we did a Rogue Trader, like little mini tournament. And that was really fun. So I was thinking of maybe having a go at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like it. Maybe play some Realm of Chaos.
Do you tend to go for the 3 days or 2 or what?
Yeah, well, because I'm in Nottingham, I can catch the bus out there. So I go all 3 days. The highlight of my year.
Yeah, I everything leading up to that. But yeah, no, it's great to hear about not just Ramshackle, but your experiences doing that as well. Anything that we've not really covered that you would like to bring up or chat about before we start getting wrapped up?
I mean, obviously just thank you to everybody who's like, you know, sort of supports me and comes and plays games with me. And I really appreciate it. You know, I really just love playing games, making models. You know, I'm so privileged to be given the opportunity or like, you know, to be able to support myself, you know, and my kids and, you know, off this really sort of like niche hobby that we're all into. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to playing some, you know, like some other games. I've had one game of Trench Crusade so far and I really enjoyed that. So I'm like thinking about what gang I'm going to put together and things at the moment. Yeah, what else? Stuff that I've got on the workbench at the moment. Did you see, you know, Kettle Trout? Did you see the Fimir that he sculpted?
No, I didn't, no.
Ah, yeah. Well, I say Fimir. I mean, that's something a bit like Fimir. Fimorians?
Right.
Anyway, we're going to be doing like, I've been doing the molds for them, got the first casts out recently. So, yeah, hassle him. Like, I don't know what his plan is on releasing him, but yeah, I'm just going to send him the like first casts tomorrow. So that's pretty fun. It's like a big range, like 10, 12 like unique sculpts. Really lovely. And a whole bunch of really cool shields. Yeah, I've been like working on some little bits and bobs, sort of like weird war stuff. Maybe I'll use it in Trench Crusade. Maybe I won't. Because I've been playing that Last War as well, which I really enjoy. Just like the Mortborg, what is it? Forbidden Psalm, like World War One stuff. Yeah, some more Gardens of Hecate stuff on the desk. Yeah, so really just got loads of new stuff coming out pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Just got to make the molds, take the photos. It's a whole big process. It's like, yeah, you know, you get sent the original or like make it myself. then you've got to like build a sprue for it. And I've been doing like ones where I detail up the sprue so it doesn't end up in landfill. Hopefully somebody will use it as a like a barrier or like cut the rivets off it or whatever and reuse that stuff. So yeah, you know, like build all that, get it ready for molding, pour the rubber. Then the next day you've got to like cut the master out of the rubber. Because I had a go at doing like two-part molds. You always get really bad mold lines on them, or like I do. So I just do the kind of like split molds. So yeah, you got to do that. Do your casts. Then you got to like photograph them unpainted, photograph them on the sprue, paint them up, photograph them again, do all your like shop entry and everything. And now I have to do all this like a generator, like my European safety certificates for the product.
The
so yeah, it's a bit of a faff. And you know, like when it sounds all right just doing one of them, but then when you've got like seven of them, and then three of this, and then eight of these. Yeah, the time mounts up, and you're like, "Was that really 3 months that took me?" Mm-hmm. You know, like any model making, just takes blooming forever, doesn't it?
Well, I'm glad to hear that it's been a good couple of weeks, and hopefully it ends up being a really good year for you and beyond that as well.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, the hobby needs folks like yourself, and folks out there need to support businesses like yourself to make sure we don't lose them. So keep it up, and well done to everyone who's supported as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.